Okay, Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem. We are learning Maral Netzach Yisrael. We've been basically learning Perek Hey the whole time. A profound Perek analyzing the causes of the Churban. So now he's going to move on to study the continuation of the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. So we remember the continuation of this story. What happened was like this. We all know the famous part. Bar Kamtza was thrown out of the party and terribly humiliated. And he decided he was going to take vengeance on the whole Jewish people. Just gives you an idea of his character. I'll just note that Avigdor Miller in his history series actually notes that he was a notorious troublemaker. It's not like this person just all of a sudden here appears on the scene. But whatever the case is, he goes to the authorities and he argues, he tells them, he files a complaint, the Jewish people want to rebel against you, the Romans. They say, what's your basis for that? He says, well, send a carbon and see if they'll offer it. I'm telling you that they're going to reject it. He had a diabolical scheme in mind. What he did was, he took the carbon, they sent it with him, with, I suppose, a band of soldiers, whatever it is, messengers to go report to the ruler. They sent it with him, and what he did was, he made a little nick in its, well, we'll see, either in its lip or in its, in like its eyelid. We'll see. But whatever the case is, he made a little nick that renders it, that disqualifies it as a carbon. And his idea was that then the Jews will have to reject the carbon, and that will prove to the emperor that indeed they rebelled against him, they're not willing to accept the carbon from him. So what happened from there, we'll see, but first we're going to analyze this part of the story. So first of all, the Maharal lays down some important understandings. He says as follows. So in case you're following in the Sefer, you don't need to be. We're in Perek Hey in the paragraph that begins with Me'ata. So he says as follows. He says, the Beis HaMikdash, he notes an interesting phenomenon. He notes that when the Romans captured the Jewish people, when the Romans conquered Eretz Yisrael, the ruling over Eretz Yisrael, they did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Right? The Romans ruled for a long time before we were anywhere near the Churban. They didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They weren't necessarily interested in destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Maharal works with a certain spiritual dynamic that was at play there as a certain undercurrent. And he says as follows. He says we have to understand something. If the Beis HaMikdash was something that was exclusive to the Jewish people, then the Romans who are coming there to subdue the Jewish people, and the Beis HaMikdash is like the cherry on the top for the Jewish people, they would have destroyed it. But he says, actually, the Beis HaMikdash is not just about the Jewish people. The Beis HaMikdash is what provides the entire world. The way he puts it is, it's the perfection of the world. The perfection of the entire world, not just the Jewish people. And therefore, it is actually in the benefit of the entire world, Jews and non-Jews, that there be a Beis HaMikdash. To put that into different terms, just that we can a bit more relate to rather than Maharal's esoteric terms, we've already discussed the understanding that the Beis HaMikdash is the source of Shechina for all of Eretz Yisrael. Now the truth is we have to add to that. It's the source of Shechina for the entire world. Now, you might ask me, if so, so what's the source of Shechina in our world today? So you know what? The truth is that that's part of why we mourn the Churban. It's basically a world that doesn't have Shechina pulsing in it. Now, that's a statement that has very many different degrees. Certainly, we have Shechina extant among us today, but relative to what it was, when it will be, when there's a Beis HaMikdash, it's, as the Kuzari puts it, it's a difference between in quality between a live body and a dead body. Whatever the case is, the Beis HaMikdash is really the source of Shechina for the entire world. The Beis HaMikdash is where the Shekhinah, so to speak, comes from on high and rests in our world, and from there it radiates out to Eretz Yisrael, and from there to the entire world. Just to illustrate this in an interesting way, the Chazal tell us that Shlomo HaMelech had trees of all sorts surrounding the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash. Now, what was going on there was actually something interesting. As we said, the Beis HaMikdash was kind of like, we'll call it like a power plant. The Kohanim, through their avodas, we discussed that length a different day, they, so to speak, harnessed the power of the Shekhinah. They brought the Shekhinah down to rest in our world, and from there it channeled out to Eretz Yisrael. Now, this was a complex system, because the Shekhinah, the real full force in charge of the Shekhinah was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Beis HaMikdash. And from there it channeled out. And it started dividing into different types. It's like if you have electricity, you have one source of electricity, but that electricity then, its charge comes through its different channels, and here it manifests as a fan that's blowing air, and there it manifests as a tape recorder that's playing music, and here, and in the third place it manifests as an oven that's baking. So it's the electricity channeling, coming through different things and expressing itself differently, right? But it's all the same electricity fueling it. So the Beis HaMikdash, outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it already started breaking into channels that caused the Shekhinah to manifest in different ways. The bracha of the Shekhinah then channeled out to Eretz Yisrael. Just to give a broad example, we have the menorah on the south side of the Beis HaMikdash, outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Nehechol. We have the menorah on the south side, and we have the shulchan, the table with the lechem apanim on it, on the north side. Or, if you were standing with your back to the Kodesh HaKadoshim facing out, you had the menorah on the right side, and you had the shulchan with the lechem apanim, with the bread on it, on the left side. Now, what were these? The menorah was the source of Chachma. It was the source of spiritual siyata d'shmaya, of spiritual divinity. Meaning, a person who is sitting and learning Gemara, somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, somewhere in Yerushalayim, outside the Beis HaMikdash, where did he get his divine assistance from? It was the Shekhinah that was settled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, channeled out through the Menorah. The Menorah was the source of divine wisdom. That was where he got the insight, the divine insight, the extra level, supernatural insight in his learning. It was the siyata d'shmaya, it was the Shekhinah that was channeling through the menorah. Now, you have a farmer somewhere else. You have a farmer somewhere else, and he's planting his field in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and his crops are growing beautifully, supernaturally luscious crops. Where does that bracha come from? So that bracha came from the shulchan that was on the other side of the heichal. This was there where the material bracha radiated from. Again, it was the same source of Shekhinah coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? And channeling through the menorah, it radiated out into Eretz Yisrael in the form of divine wisdom, divine insight, siyata d'shmaya in the realm of learning, wisdom. And as it channeled through the Shulchan, it manifested in Eretz Yisrael in the form of material bracha, divine material bracha, right? Amazing crops, bracha in all areas, fertility, etc. So it was, now really it broke down to more than that, you know, it, having to do with all the different aspects of the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. So now, here's something interesting. So as we're saying, the electricity of the Shekhinah, if you will, it channeled out of the Beis HaMikdash to Eretz Yisrael, but you know what? It also channeled beyond. It channeled out to Africa, out to Asia, out to Europe. It channeled out to the rest of the world as well, bringing the world bracha. It wasn't exclusive to the Jewish people. It was bringing the world bracha. In fact, we know that On Sukkot, right? We especially bring 70 karbanas on behalf of the 70 nations of the world, and this is part of, at the beginning of the year, part of what sets up their siyata dishmaya. And moreover, we know that a non-Jew can actually bring a karban. A non-Jew can bring a karban and bring that special siyata dishmaya, that special connection to the Shekhinah, on himself. So therefore, the Maharal says that there was this dynamic that the non-Jewish conquerors themselves sensed that the Beis HaMikdash is not something that we should be destroying. We'll maintain it. Now, in fact, the Chachamim say that it goes even further than that. This was not something conscious. I have to stress that, and we'll see that soon also. This was not something conscious. On the contrary, the Chachamim say that if the nations of the world would know how the Beis HaMikdash benefits them, they would sponsor making it, building it out of gold, the whole thing out of gold. But they didn't necessarily know that consciously, maybe to different levels. They said that there was some benefit from it. But the Maharal says there was this certain sense, a certain undercurrent, that a non-conscious awareness of that this is something we want to maintain. And therefore, they did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now here is where we have a subtle split. Because on the one hand, it's true. The Beis HaMikdash is there for the benefit of the entire world, not just the Jewish people. But on the other hand, the Beis HaMikdash is really, there's another piece to this puzzle. And this is something that the world at large might have a harder time understanding. Part of that bracha is in the fact that the Jewish people are the supreme nation, are the nation that's at the top of the pyramid. When the Jewish people are at the top of the pyramid, the other nations are able to get their siyata dishmaya through their connection with the Jewish people, through the role that they serve in the function of the Jewish people. If we want to put this into very coarse terms, even though it could be to very many different subtle levels, but so to speak, let's say they are serving the Jewish people. So therefore, they share the effect of the siyata dishmaya of the Ashras HaShchinah that the Jewish people have. So now, part and parcel of the understanding that the Beis HaMikdash actually provides benefit to the world lies also the fact, which would be less popular for them, they could live with that. Just knowing that there's a Beis HaMikdash where a divinity channels through that benefits them, they could live with that. But if they were to understand the next piece of the puzzle, the part and parcel of that is that it's the Beis HaMikdash as the seat of the Jewish people, as the connection of the Jewish people with the Shekhinah, which places the Jewish people at the top of the pyramid. That already they would have a harder time with if they were to understand that. But again, everything we're talking about here is not conscious awareness. We're talking about certain subtle senses, some subconscious or completely non-conscious senses that made them sense that Beis HaMikdash is not something that is in opposition with us. On the contrary, this is something we want to maintain. And therefore, not only did the conquerors not destroy the Beis HaMikdash as a rule, but they actually would utilize the Beis HaMikdash, they would send karbanis, etc., and they would actually reap the benefits of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, when did that change? So the Maharal says, once again, the non-Jews in them themselves would not destroy it. It was only once, as we've been discussing in the previous days and weeks, the Jewish people drained the Beis HaMikdash of its inner meaning, right? Once they became split and divided, which lost them the right to have the Shekhinah among them, the Shekhinah departed, the Beis HaMikdash, for all practical purposes, was already destroyed. It was already destroyed. The wood and stone was still there, but for all practical purposes, it was gone. It was then that the non-Jews came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But as long as it still had its inner essence, they didn't. Which brings us back to the fundamental understanding that all of these things ultimately are the effect of our actions. The world at large cannot affect the Jewish people if it's not rooted in the spiritual dynamics between Hashem and the Jewish people. But whatever it is, we come back to the story. So how exactly did this play out? So the Maharal says that there was a certain undercurrent here that Bar Kamsa was diabolically trying to manipulate. He was going to go to the king and tell him, send a karban. Right? Now, he wanted to bring out that the Beis HaMikdash actually manifests the superiority of the Jewish people, because he knew that once the ruler, the Roman ruler, senses that, he will want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Like we said before, as long as he understood that the Beis HaMikdash is at the top of the world and providing the world with a divine radiance, that's fine. But once part of that picture is that even though we are the great Roman Empire, we are the rulers, the Jewish people are still above us, that already they would have a hard time with. And this would make them want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So what did he do? What was his plan? The Maharal reads a lot of depth into the scheme. He took this behemoth that the ruler sent, and he made a little nick in its lip. Now, what's the idea of the nick in its lip? The idea would be that when they bring the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim will reject it. When the messengers of the king say, why are you rejecting it? Well, it has a nick in the lip on it. We can't offer this carbon because it's not valid. Now, that in and of itself is fine. You know, if it's not valid, it's not valid. We understand that there are rules, but it's a little more complicated than that. Because in the world at large, it was universally accepted that you don't bring a blemished carbon. But for the world at large, in non-Jewish terms, a blemish in the lips was not a problem. A little nick in the lip. They didn't see that as a blemish of the behemoth. Only the Jews did. And therefore, just looking at the Gemara simply, what happened was the Jews came and said, well, it has a blemish in the lip. The messengers of the king took that as an excuse. There's no such thing. There's no problem with a blemish in the lip. And therefore, the Jews just are rejecting the ruler's carbon. So the Maharal asks, so why couldn't the Jews just explain, yes, we have a different set of rules? Yes, for you, you would not consider a nick in the lip a blemish, but for us, a nick in the lip is a blemish. The Maharal is going, we'll see this tomorrow, Mitzvah Bli Neder, but the Maharal is going to go on and explain to us that that's exactly the trap that Bar Kamsa was trying to lay. He was trying to bring out that the Jewish standard of bringing a korban is superior to the non-Jewish standard. And tomorrow we'll see what that represents and why, on the contrary, that is itself what would arouse the ire of the Roman ruler and make him want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But we'll leave that for tomorrow, Mi'at Hashem, and we'll end here for tonight.